Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
I want to get a little bit back into the Breonna Taylor decision today. No officers charged directly in her death. We spent some time an hour ago. I have some audio from the Attorney General, who David Cameron, who's great today, African-American Attorney General. Of course, he is not. Dave, actually, when I'm talking to Chief Fitch here, Mr. Klein, I just tweeted something out where there was some audio from MSNBC that was pretty insulting to Mr. Cameron. See if you can pull that up, Dave, and we'll get to that here in just a couple of minutes. All right, Chief Fitch is with us, County Councilman, my County Councilman. There was a meeting last night. Let's start with that. What happened to the meeting last night? Technical difficulties, as we say in the radio world?
Well, technically, there wasn't a meeting last night. It was postponed. So they realized, as the meeting was getting ready to be prepared to start, they received comments from the public saying, listen, we can't get in. We can't get into the link. It's not working. So they started looking into it and found out that someone had accidentally printed an old link on the council agenda that announces the meeting. And as you know, public bodies are required to announce 24 hours in advance, unless it's an emergency, of a public meeting. So since the public didn't have that 24 hours in advance on how to access the public meeting, the decision was made to postpone it until 7:45 this evening.
Now, did I see you tweet something about more than 400 email comments for tonight?
Correct. 443.
I thought that the clerk had to read all those. So what happens with those?
So what happened last week when there were 344 is the council took a vote and said, we're going to read as many comments as we can into the record for 2 hours. I think they were able to read, last check I knew, was about 40 some odd complaints in 2 hours, or complaints, actually comments, probably most were complaints. At any rate, so they were able to do that. I would expect the same thing probably will happen again this evening. The math last week is if we read all the comments last week and each took their 3 minutes that they're allowed, it would take 17 hours to read all the public comments into the record.
Oh, geez.
So
all
one
right.
of the things I did ask to happen last week, and I will ask again this evening, is that all of the comments, every one of them that were submitted, be included in the public record and into the journal of the council meeting. Even though we may not be able to read them all out loud, even the ones we read last week out loud, that the staff read last week, were very, very similar, mostly dealing with the sports situation and the public health order.
Right. Well, keep us posted on what happens tonight. Could be an interesting one. I wanted to get you on for a quick update since we chatted yesterday. Good luck
Certainly
tonight.
Certainly will, Mark. All right, thanks.
All right, take care. 308 at KMOX. All right, so I see Sarah Silverman. I like Sarah Silverman. She's so nice to have met her in person. Our friend Doug High went on a date with her for that TV show. She's very funny. She says this about Breonna Taylor. I would like to know how this judge jury would feel if their daughter was shot and killed in her home while she slept. Would this look like justice to them? And she retweeted the Associated Press report, no officers charged directly in Breonna Taylor's death. And Sarah Silverman is acting upon emotion, and I understand emotion, but unfortunately, and this is my question for those people who want justice in Breonna Taylor's death. What is that justice? What is the justice? Charges against all the officers? You can't manufacture charges. So I'm a little confused because there's never, and I said this yesterday, there's never going to be anything that's good enough. If you don't like the laws which allowed this warrant to be executed, and by the way, it was not a no-knock warrant. They knocked. They identified themselves. I think that a lot of people still have a lot of confusion. This officer, Officer Hankinson, who was charged today, basically with recklessly firing his weapon, his bullets did not hit Breonna Taylor. The officer whose bullet killed Breonna Taylor was the one who was shot himself in the thigh. He did not fire his weapon until he entered the apartment after knocking, witnessing a gun from Mr. Walker, the boyfriend. Mr. Walker fired at him. He returned fire. So for those people demanding justice, you can't charge Hankinson with murder because his bullet didn't kill the victim, Breonna Taylor, I suppose, and I'd have to know a little bit more about the specifics of how the law would work in accordance with other shootings. For example, if you are with someone who commits homicide, you can also be charged if it's in the commission of a crime. I think the law would read differently for police officers. Maybe people don't like that. But what would the charge be against that officer? Okay, let's go to the other two officers. How can you charge them when, as Mr. Cameron explained today, the law protects them because they were returning fire. They had been fired upon. So let's hear Mr. Cameron, Dave. Let's play that. The attorney general, he's a black attorney general in Kentucky.
Evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. The officer's statements about their announcement are corroborated by an independent witness who was near in a proximity to apartment 4. In other words, the warrant was not served as a no-knock warrant. When officers were unable to get anyone to answer or open the door to apartment 4, the decision was made to breach the door. After breaching the door, Sergeant Mattingly was the first and only officer to enter the residence. Sergeant Mattingly identified two individuals standing beside one another at the end of the hall, a male and a female. In his statement, he says that the male was holding a gun, arms extended, in a shooting stance. Sergeant Mattingly saw the man's gun fire, heard a boom, and immediately knew he was shot as a result of feeling heat in his upper thigh. Kenneth Walker fired the shot that hit Sergeant Mattingly, and there is no evidence to support that Sergeant Mattingly was hit by friendly fire from other officers. Mr. Walker admitted that he fired one shot and was the first to shoot. In addition to all the testimony, the ballistics report shows that the round that struck Sergeant Mattingly was fired from a 9mm handgun. The LMPD officers fired 40 caliber handguns.
So one thing that gets buried, and when Joe Arnold from Louisville joined me yesterday, we emphasized this. I don't know if we did an hour ago, is that, yeah, Mr. Walker admitted, he's on the record. This isn't even in dispute, okay? He's the guy who fired first. Now, what he says was he didn't know who was entering the apartment. He didn't know it was police, is what he says. Now, they weren't in bed. They weren't asleep. They were in the hallway. Breonna Taylor was shot in the hallway. So that's what happened that night. Now, you can say, oh, the police are lying. That's not what happened. There aren't enough witnesses. I don't know that that might not be true. We don't have body camera video. There is some suspicion that there was body camera video that has been hidden. The Louisville Courier-Journal looked into that. They don't have any evidence that would indicate that. They don't have any evidence that would indicate that it did not happen. It would help a lot if we had body cam video from this. But again, the warrant was, I'm trying to think of the right word here. The warrant that was applied for had Breonna Taylor's pictures, her social security number, her address. It wasn't the wrong address. All right, so a little bit more from David Cameron here. He's the AG down in Kentucky.
Sergeant Mattingly returned fire down the hallway. Mattingly fired 6 shots. Almost simultaneously, Detective Cosgrove, also in the doorway, shot 16 times. This all took place in a matter of seconds. In total, 6 bullets struck Ms. Taylor. Medical evidence obtained by our team indicates that only one shot was fatal. Further medical evidence shows that Ms. Taylor would have died from the fatal shot within a few seconds to 2 minutes after being struck. Detective Hankinson fired his weapon 10 times, including from a outside sliding glass door and through a bedroom window. Some bullets traveled through apartment 4 and into apartment 3 before some exited that apartment. At the time, 3 residents of apartment 3 were at home, including a male, a pregnant female, and a child. There is no conclusive evidence that any bullets fired from Detective Hankinson's weapon struck Ms. Taylor. The KSP ballistics analysis did not identify which of the 3 officers fired the fatal shot. After receiving that information, I asked the FBI crime lab to conduct its own analysis to see if they reached the same results. The FBI ballistics analysis concluded the fatal shot was fired by Detective Cosgrove. I think it is worth repeating again that our investigation found that Mattingly and Cosgrove were justified in their use of force after having been fired upon by Kenneth Walker. Secondary to this justification, the KSP and FBI ballistics analysis reached different conclusions, creating a reasonable doubt in the evidence about who fired the fatal shot.
So, look, there are still some questions that have not been answered, and the Justice Department is going to look into it. But my question would be, you cannot, this is what happened with Mike Brown, okay? You can't charge, I know that Antonio French and Black Lives Matters and the Post-Dispatch and Tony Messenger, they wanted Darren Wilson charged with a crime for the sake of charging him with a crime, but you can't do that, unfortunately. I know a lot of people want to do that. You can't charge. There's nothing within the law that allows the Attorney General, given the facts of the case, given what the testimony has been to the grand jury, that allows him to charge these officers with anything else. Now, the charge against Hankinson of wanton endangerment, I think, is appropriate. He was fired. He fired his weapon from outside the apartment. That's a felony. It's up to 5 years in prison. I mean, I don't know. But having said all that, if this goes to trial, there's going to be other testimony. There's going to be testimony from the other officers about what happened inside the apartment. Mr. Walker is still alive. I'm guessing that he would be brought to testify as well. So there's a lot here that is really, really nuanced. And, you know, I just clipped a friend of mine on Twitter that said something about this, you know, and how outraged he was about the decision in Kentucky. And I text him an article that I've posted on my Facebook page, also on the Twitter page from the Courier Journal in Louisville, which is a pretty good piece of journalism, which doesn't try to gloss over any of the facts, raises some pretty good questions still about the police and their actions. And his response was, you know, man, she's a nurse. It's just such a sad thing. Wrong place, wrong time. Well, wasn't the wrong place because the cops meant to be there. And there's questions about how involved she was in drug trafficking. There were no drugs that were found in her apartment. There was no cash that was found in her apartment, which is interesting because the other Walker, the drug dealer, the one who was arrested, the one that used to date Breonna Taylor, the one that the attorney claimed had not been in contact for years, the one that was in contact with Breonna Taylor in a voice recording from the jail in January talking about cash, and then that morning that she was killed on March 13th, he indicated that she had money in her apartment. Now, there was no money that was found. So there's still some confusion about the facts and everything that went down here. I'll state what I've stated all along. She did not deserve to die. This was a terrible tragedy. But what is justice then? Is it the $12 billion that was, you know, the check that was written last week? Well, that's part of it. Should there be a wrongful death suit in this case? I believe there is. I'm expecting that that will be settled in favor of the Breonna Taylor family, and it probably should be. But that's a separate issue from criminal charges against these police officers. I know that doesn't satisfy people. I know that that frustrates a lot of people, but you have to have facts. And the facts lead you far, far away from criminal charges in this case. It's 319. You want to vote absentee? We're going to tell you how next on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
Well, you know, the election is creeping up on us very, very quickly. And I think a lot of us, including myself, do not want to vote in person just because of the crowds and COVID and all that. We had Rick Stream, who is the Republican elections commissioner in St. Louis County, on not too long ago talking about some of this. I think it's been about a month, though, Rick. He joins us again on the Quiver River Electric guest line. I just thought since this is in the news again, we'd have you back just so everyone's clear on what's going on. First and foremost, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fine, Mark. Thanks for having me on again.
So what if I, let's just use me as an example. I live in St. Louis County. I would like to vote before Election Day. What do I need to do?
Sure. Well, you can come to our office. We started absentee balloting yesterday, according to state law. So our office is open from 8 to 4:30 every day and on the two Saturdays prior to the election. In addition, we're going to have four satellite locations starting October the 22nd around the county, north, south, central, and west. that people can vote in, same hours, 8 to 4:30, starting, again, the 22nd of October. So plenty of opportunities to vote in person before the election. I would like to say, though, if you've already applied for an absentee ballot, as 120,000 people have, you don't need to come in and vote in person. We started mailing out ballots yesterday. 80,000 went out in yesterday's mail. Another 20,000 went out today, and we'll have the rest of them out by the end of the week. So if you get your ballot, vote it early, vote it right away, and send it back to us. So a lot of different ways to vote before the election.
You almost said voted early and voted often. I know you did, just because that's a great saying from Chicago. But no, I want to be completely clear here, because I'm easily confused. So if I'm confused, I know other people are. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm just confused. But if I go on Saturday, I'm going to be in Clayton and getting a haircut. So if I go to do that and I stop by your office and I grab a ballot, or do I vote right then? I grab an absentee ballot and I still have to get that notarized?
No. There's two ways to vote absentee. One is to actually have a ballot mailed to you. That's normal how people do it, but also you can vote in person absentee. So if you're in Clayton on Saturday, but not this Saturday, we're not open on this Saturday. It's just the two Saturdays before the election. Yes, you can come up to our office and vote in person. And you just
Because I'd have been pissed. I'd have showed up Saturday and I'd have been like, Rick Stream, what the heck's going on, man? I'm glad you cleared
that
up.
My number, you could call me,
But so look, this is, and I'm just being honest with you, Rick, I'm confused on some of this. I want to make sure that I know how this is all working. But okay, as a follow-up, if you don't vote in person absentee and you get an absentee ballot, that does have to be notarized, right?
In certain cases it does. Now, if you are incapacitated or caring for somebody who's incapacitated, you do not need to get it notarized. The state legislature changed the law this year and added a seventh block for COVID-related issues. If you comply with that, you're 65 years or older, and you have one of these other conditions, you don't have to get that notarized. So those two situations, you do not need a notarization. The other five, you do. If you're out of town on Election Day, if you're in if you, for religious reasons, you're working for the election board, you have to get it notarized. So, and the mail-in ballot, which is a totally different issue, that's a totally different type of ballot that the legislature passed this year. The mail-in ballot, you have to request in person, or by mail. You have to get it notarized, and it has to be mailed back. So that's a totally different ballot than the absentee ballot. But for absentee balloting, the mailing situation, most of them do need to be notarized, but COVID does not, and incapacity or disablement does not either.
All right. And I appreciate the update. And that's all I need from you this afternoon. And I'm going to tell you, we're probably going to have you back here a couple of times just to remind people, because I think that the questions exist out there. But thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. I'm not going to swing in on you on Saturday and cause trouble. Okay. I'll stay home.
Well, I won't be here on Saturday, so don't. Thanks
we'll
a lot,
see
Mark.
You.
I appreciate
we'll see.
It.
These are, look, I'm not very smart. So I'm trying to follow and keep up with this the same way everyone else is. And I definitely want to vote ahead of time. So yeah, thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
News Radio 1120 KMOX. The voice of the Cardinals.
Well, so I met Vance Crowe a couple years ago, and he's been a guest on my show. He's a really, really fascinating guy. And then I was honored that he reached out recently, and he said, hey, would you be on my podcast? And I thought about it, and I said, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be on the podcast talking about some of the things that are, you know, relevant to St. Louis. One of the things that he cited was my, you know, my opinions about the city of St. Louis, if you will, which are important. So Vance invited me. He's with me this afternoon to kind of talk about the podcast. Vance Crowe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Good to hear from you.
When we first hooked up, though, refresh my memory, because you were you doing stuff for Monsanto at the time?
Yeah, I was the director of millennial engagement. So it was my job to go out and talk with all the people that had really strong feelings about GMOs and pesticides.
Well, and we, you know, one of the things that caught my attention in that conversation is we talked a lot about artificial intelligence, and you had these very interesting observations about where AI might take us in the future and just different things and how, you know, everything might change. And I thought it was a great perspective, and we had, I think, maybe a couple of good conversations on the air. So anyway, about a month ago, maybe even longer, because you became, by the way, congratulations, a new father recently, right, in the past couple of months?
Yeah, little Violet was born, and she's now taking up all of my brain space.
I understand that, but I know that when I found out it was a little girl, I was telling you, you're going to love it, and you have no idea how much fun it's going to be. But you invited me to be on your podcast, and here's my, you know, Vance, I'll just tell you, my first reaction is podcasts. I'm a guy on the radio. I hate podcasts. Why do I want to help someone with a podcast? But I like you, so I thought, you know what, I'm going to do the podcast. And I don't feel that strongly about podcasts, but let's be honest, there's a little, you know, there's competition that didn't used to exist in radio. Anyway, so I want to talk about what we discussed, but I have to tell you kind of a funny story. So as I'm thinking about this, you sent me a video link, right? That's how we had this discussion last week. It was a Zoom link or something else, something similar?
Yeah, we did it over Zoom. Yep.
Okay, so in my mind, as a radio audio guy, I'm thinking, well, this is a podcast. We're doing this on Zoom, but it's just going to be an audio thing, and there's not going to be a video component. So I know that you and I were looking at one another, but that morning I made a conscious decision. This will probably maybe shock you because you saw what I looked like. I had a hat on, didn't look like I cared at all about my my looks. I'm thinking this thing is not going to get out there visually, only the audio. So then, as you remember, at a certain point in the conversation, we're talking, my lawn crew starts being very loud outside the window here where I'm sitting right now in my studio. So I take my computer where I'm doing the Zoom call. I start walking around my house. In case you were wondering, Vance, this is what was happening. I'm walking around my house to find a quiet place to do the podcast interview. And lo and behold, I finally had to just kind of give up and wait for them to finish. But that was the reason, by the way, that I'm wandering the house. Were you at least curious about that?
Well, you had kind of made mention of it. And actually, it's funny that you bring this up because I had two different people comment that that Mark Reardon is so good at his job that he can walk, be on camera, and talk all at the same time. So it was an impressive move to the viewers.
Well, I was trying to be quiet. You know, I'm walking around with the computer, and then the windows were open. It was a beautiful day. We just did this last week, and the windows were open, so I could, you know, hear the lawn crew. Anyway, let's kind of talk about, we got into different things. Talk about the podcast and what you always want it to be about.
My goal is to find those kind of conversations that you never really seem to have time for, and with people that if you met and you had a chance to get to talk with them for a little while, you would discover that they are an ocean of different ideas and experiences. And so it could be anybody from Jackie Joyner Kersee to Temple Grandin to, I've had my Uber driver on one time, just people that have something to offer, but oftentimes the speed at which we're operating, we don't get a chance to dig into what they know about.
Well, and I'm honored and humbled. I don't know if I fit the bill there, but I'm glad you invited me. And I think we had, you know, one of the things that was a big advantage, and I think I told you this, I'm jealous of conversations. We do these things called KMOX Profiles. And, you know, in those situations, I have longer conversations. They end up in a podcast form, and then on the air, they're sort of broken into segments. But it's sometimes frustrating as a host, and it has been for my entire career. You sometimes get into the meat of the conversation with a guest, and then you run out of time. You know, in this format, you have a little bit of time to breathe, right? Which is kind of nice for conversations. And there's not that pressure. And I found when there's not that pressure of like the live radio, sometimes you get different things out of people. Have you discovered that?
Yeah, you know, I think that there are all these trade-offs. On the one hand, for podcasts, we get to have a good, deep, long-form conversation. But also, people have to know what they're looking for when they go to find a podcast. Whereas your conversations can spread out over the airwaves and they fill all the cracks and crevices. So anybody that flips on the radio can stumble into these conversations that you're having that may be shorter, but offer people a way to look at the world just by virtue of them knowing where you're at on the dial. So I think that everybody always looks at the grass and it looks a lot greener on the other side.
So you asked a great question that I'm still not satisfied with my answer, and I've been thinking about it ever since we discussed it last week. So I want you to sort of frame the question that you asked toward the end of the podcast about something that most people, you have to refresh my memory, something that most people probably would disagree with you on that you're going to insist you're right, something along those lines, right?
Yeah, it's I call it the Peter Thiel paradox, and it's a paradox. So a paradox is something that when you first look at it, it seems like, no, that can't be right. But then when you dig into it deeper, you realize there's something really interesting and unique about that way of looking at it. So I always ask people, what is one thing that no one agrees with you on, but that you think is true. And you never know what kind of answers come out when people start talking about it, because if you fail at the first part, if you say something that people already agree with, then you've already failed. But then if you say something that nobody agrees with, now you've got to find your way out of this complex problem that you've put yourself in. So what I think, it's a great thought exercise, because it pushes you to get out to the edge of what you know and what other people have told you you should know. It makes you actually have to think for yourself.
Do you ever ask that question in advance? In other words, so, and I don't know if I could have come up with a better answer. I'll share my answer here in a second. But that one caught me off guard because I felt like I had to really think about it and I didn't have a good answer. So my answer was along the lines of just things dealing with climate change, because I'm not an alarmist. I understand that the climate's changing, but I think that all the climate alarmism is absolutely crazy. But I'm still not satisfied with that answer. Vance, share with my audience what your answer is on that.
Yeah, my Peter Thiel paradox is I believe the state of Missouri should put aside a pile of money and just wait for the state of Illinois to get into complete financial straits, or at least admit that they're in financial straits. And then what we should do is buy all of the land between the Mississippi River and go east of Cahokia Mound and bring that into Missouri. Cahokia Mounds is the core civilization. People often forget that we have one of the great civilizations in all of the history of civilization right in that area. And that's because that land and the way that the continent is structured, it makes it a very valuable place. But then you also have that industrial corridor throughout East St. Louis, where there's train lines, there's access to the river. And if we're going to be reshoring a whole bunch of the industry, whether it's chemical manufacturing or just physical objects, we're going to need a place to do that. And along that river, there's a whole bunch of mothballed factories that we could get up and running, get people employed, make that place vibrant. And I imagine one day that East St. Louis could be the Brooklyn of St. Louis, where you look on the skyline and you see a beautiful St. Louis skyline, but then you've also really built up and made East St. Louis into all that it could be.
It's a great creative idea. I used to do this bit on the show for many years. Every once in a while, we'll pull it out of the mothballs, where I called it Lawmaker for a Day. And you could, and some people got it and some people didn't, but you would call the show and say, this is my piece of legislation that maybe never would have a chance of being signed. My, for example, was always, as I teed it up, I had a no talking in the movie theater policy, three strikes, you're out. And when I say out, I mean, you never go to a movie theater again. So, you know, that I'm going to stand by that rule. Look, Vance, great conversation on the podcast. I appreciate you inviting me. Tell folks where they can find it.
Yeah, the podcast is just called the Vance Crowe Podcast, and you can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Or if you want to see Mark walking around in his house, you can catch it on YouTube.
I wish I would have prepared more for that. Vance Crowe, let's do it again. Thanks, man.
Loved it.
It was a fun conversation, but if you watch it, and I did, I put it up on the Twitter side, I put it on the show Facebook page as well, and you'll see me walking around for like long stretches, just sort of wandering my house. But I was like searching for someplace that was sort of quiet, and I don't know that I really found that. 3:46, we have an audio cut of the day coming up on KMOX.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. We're going to do a multi-tiered cut of the day this afternoon. First, one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite Springsteen records, The River, Mr. Bruce Springsteen. I can't believe this. 71 years old today. The new record coming out in about a month. I think they're going to release another single this week from that new record. On to another piece of music here. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago until I was 14 years old, and I certainly remember Gale Sayers, amazing running back for the Chicago Bears. But I remember him not only because of that, but because this was probably, if I had to think of the first movie to make me cry, it was Brian's Song, about the relationship between Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo that began in 1967. They became roommates, unlikely roommates, because Gale Sayers was black, Piccolo was white, and they, according to NFL rules, couldn't be roommates for a while. The club dropped the policy. They forged a bond. Brian Piccolo had cancer, and the movie was made out of his story, Brian's Song.
It looks like he might never play football again, or a long time. I think we should dedicate ourselves to give our maximum effort to win this game and give the game ball a pick.
Yeah, you know, I watched that movie. That movie's from 1979, or I'm sorry, 1971, and it was on recently. When I say recently, maybe in the last couple of years, and I think they remade it, which was not a good idea. Billy Dee Williams was Gale Sayers. It's not a really good movie. I think I thought it was a great movie when I was a kid. I don't think it holds up very well, but you know what holds up is Gale Sayers. Five-time All-Pro. He averaged 5 yards per carry for his entire career. He twice led the league in rushing, including 1969 with 1,032 yards. And that was after an ACL tear. And even beyond that, Dick Butkus, one of the all-time great linebackers, said he credits Gale Sayers with his success because he had to tackle Gale Sayers in practice. He said that in June of 2019, at the Bears' 100th anniversary celebration, Gale Sayers, dead at the age of 77 after suffering from dementia. That is your audio cut of the day on this Wednesday afternoon. Total Information PM is coming up next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.